10 seconds, the countdown will come directly from the timing and firing trailer.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Quantel, opt-in, opt-in, go tape.
This is Publius bringing you A Step Farther Out. Your weekly radio message from the Man and Atom Society.
And all this will probably sound better if I unmute my microphone. It is Saturday once again, friends, at 19 hours UTC, on the 27th of April in the glorious future year of 2024. And I am coming to you again from Munich, capital of the Free State of Bavaria in southern Germany. So, let's see. Rolly says it's too cold by his standards to get out of bed and type. Well, I say good man. It was finally warm here today by some standard. Not by my standard, but by some standard. I think it may have got up as far as 15 centigrade. The nice thing was there was no sleet, snow, or hail today. Which was a great relief. And the sun was shining. And I went out and I walked in the park and I saw the new recruits from the Ministry of Silly Walks doing their thing. Well, I suppose that's who they were. A lot of young ladies in tunics and socks and not a lot else, doing some really fascinating things with their legs. I suppose it is possible that they were girls' football teams. But whatever they were doing, one group of them was high-stepping so high they were throwing themselves in the air about half their body height as they walked, which was pretty impressive. And there was another group that was sort of side-shuffling along, but really fast. Anyway, so lots going on today. And I'm sure that the people with PV power systems were oh so happy as their meters started turning over for the first time in months. I don't mean to be cruel about them, but really. I've been thinking a lot about expectation versus reality recently. Expectation versus reality, of course, has been a problem I've raised previously. What people expect from a system versus what that system actually delivers. Something I will remark, interesting news items that have come to the fore recently. The various journalists sued the German Energy and Environment Ministry to get the paperwork related to the shutdown of nuclear power plants and the internal policy debates over doing that at a time when, you know, Russia is still using gas exports to fund its war against Ukraine, right? That ought to be kind of controversial. Anyway, back in 2022, Minister Habeck gave a speech saying that using nuclear power would not reduce gas imports at all, which is an interesting claim. And so basically, press organization sued to try and get access to the official documents, which are supposed to be available anyway, and the Energy and Environment Ministry put forward all kinds of ridiculous counterclaims until eventually Supreme Court basically ruled, no, you can't keep Stonewall, you've got to release them. And it turns out that there was quite an elaborate staff analysis, as there usually is, and that Minister Habeck never saw that staff analysis, at least according to the paper trail, that it got as far as the desk of his parliamentary secretary or something of that kind, who saw it and didn't like what it said and put it in the trash bin and drafted his own memorandum for the minister. Well, this secretary is certainly the person to be take the fall for this, because he has already been fired in a corruption scandal. So, that was interesting. Again, we'll see whether anything comes of that. I feel like putting up posters, maybe glue them over the posters for the AFD, the far-right party. Well, it doesn't have to be a far-right party, but it's one of those parties which is made up largely of malcontents. And the thing about things which largely attract malcontents is it's very easy for the far-right to take them over. It's an important distinction. There's a lot of groups that don't start out to try and be, you know, Nazi sympathizers or whatever, but the Nazi sympathizers find it very easy to colonize them, as it were. Anyway, passing over that fairly familiar phenomenon, you know, you can find these things anywhere. Even, you know, model train clubs get taken over this way. Anyway, regardless of that, I feel like I want to make up some posters that say, Gruna Leute, warum sprechen Sie mit gespaltener Zunge? Bei Kohle wieder Einstieg ist keine Dekarbonisation. Bei Atomausstieg ist auch keine Dekarbonisation. Dieser Wahnsinn fordert den Rechtsextremismus. Which is to say, hey, you Greens, why do you speak with a forked tongue? A little bit of a pun there, because gespaltener, Kernspaltung is, of course, nuclear fission. Anyway, but why do you speak with a forked tongue? There is no decarbonization in reactivating coal-fired power plants, which they've been doing. There is no decarbonization either in shutting down nuclear power plants. And this kind of nonsense only strengthens the extreme right. You know, that's the message that I want to bring home, is that they, you know, if they really truly have any objections other than das Atom bleibt daraus, you know, we can't have nuclear power, that's our only real policy. If they have any other policies, right, if they have any other objectives or goals, their anti-nuclear policy is truly hurting that. But I was talking about expectation and perception versus reality. So, a little news item which SDFer MNW turned up in his news show, which plays in this slot on weekdays. The fire marshal in New York City has begun arresting people for improper handling of electric vehicle batteries. That there has been a problem. I mean, this is it's an obvious problem, right? That, and I've mentioned it before, that in New York City, of course, driving around in a car is a losing proposition most of the time. Bicycling is not. And there are bicycle messengers and delivery people and that kind of thing. And of course, they find that they can, if they have an electric assist bicycle, they can travel farther in a day. They can travel faster without wearing themselves out, meaning they can do more deliveries and get more income at the end of the day. And so it makes sense for them to try to increase their income by increasing their performance by using these electric assisted bicycles. Now, the thing about electric assist bicycles is that one of the things you can do, you don't want to wait for it to charge, you can swap out the battery. But if you're a bicycle messenger, there is a tendency, right, to buy cheap batteries. That's the thing, gray market batteries, batteries that are not properly certified, properly inspected, and so on. And I've talked about this already, right, the problems that come along with these batteries. And the thing is, I don't want anyone to imagine that what I'm saying is that electric vehicles are somehow inherently unsafe, right? They're not any worse inherently than gasoline vehicles. To give you an example, a few days before I left home in Texas, I was driving on the freeway and passing under an overpass. On the other side of the road, there was a car burning, very, very, very much burning, you know, very on fire, and everybody was just sort of driving past it. What can you do? And then a few days after I got here, there was a fire. A small delivery vehicle, in other words, not a big truck, but probably a delivery van, caught fire in the tunnel on the Mittler Ring just over here, very close by. And the tunnel was shut down for a couple of days while they inspected it, make sure that there wasn't major structural damage and so on. Interestingly, I was passing by the fire station earlier today, and they had a sign saying that the driver of this vehicle is still being sought by the authorities, that he escaped from the van, but didn't show up at any of the hospitals, and they really want to talk to him. They want to find out what happened, and he's disappeared into thin air. And that's nice. But the point here is not that electric vehicles are somehow uniquely dangerous. I mean, bluntly put, right, something that has enough energy in it to propel a 2,500 kilogram vehicle 500 kilometers at 120 kilometers an hour is inherently dangerous. And it doesn't matter if that's a gasoline tank or if it's an electric battery. Now, on the one hand, you can say the battery contains its own oxidizer, so you can't put out a battery fire. On the other hand, putting out gasoline fires isn't easy. And to an extent, the electrolytes in the battery are in a physical condition which reduces the violence of the reaction that they can have. So I would say it's roughly a wash in terms of what you'd call inherent danger. It's simply the fact that we've had 100 years and more of motor cars using petrol being pretty common to understand what the hazards are, to develop reasonably safe practices, and to make those reasonably safe practices reasonably common. And when working with mains AC, we've had close on 150 years of experience with mains electric power. And we've had all that time to develop safe methods of working. And so although, yes, sticking a fork in a light socket is still a bad idea, the likelihood is you're not going to get killed. The likelihood is it's not going to burn down your house. The likelihood is a circuit breaker will trip and you'll go and reset it. And then you have to, you know, reset your digital clock. Boo-hoo, right? So we have developed safe accessories, safe appliances, safe working techniques as a result of which people get very complacent and they imagine that, well, electricity is a solved problem, it's safe, right? And so they don't think about the fact that these high energy density batteries are actually fairly new, meaning that whatever expectations you have regarding them from your previous experience with electricity may be violated. That's the key. Right? Your expectations may not match up with reality. And something else that's been happening in the past 10, 15 years or so, I would say, is the import of extremely questionable electronic gewgaws and gimcracks. In other words, the idea being that a lot of the electronic junk that you're getting off of Amazon or, God help us, Wish or Temu, if it has certification marks on it at all, they're likely to be purely decorative. In other words, it's likely that there's no actual certification, that there was no actual testing ever performed on that thing to make sure that it meets safety code and RF interference standards and all those kinds of things, right? So people have gotten used to having these cheap pieces of electrical equipment that fail early and may be dangerous. And they just don't think about it. And so when somebody comes up to them and says, oh yeah, Huawei or one of the other Chinese cell phone, you know, smartphone vendors is now doing a car, they say, oh yeah, I'm going to buy that. Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, that sounds real cool. You know, and they don't think that, you know, the USB charger that they got with their Huawei or whatever it was cell phone, if you actually put a voltmeter across, it produces 8 volts open circuit, not 5, according to the standard. That's a thing that I think has become a problem, is that for a long time, real danger associated with electrical equipment was fairly rare, because if it was going to be sold in a store in a place like the US or Germany or France or Britain, it had to go through a long chain of custody to get there and had to pass through the hands of things like the National Board of Fire Underwriters with their UL Underwriters Laboratory mark, right? And so people just sort of expect things to work right. People expect things to be what they're marked on the package, even if they cost 15 cents with free shipping from China. I'm sorry, but it's just unlikely that you're going to get the thing you think you're going to get. Although, I do have to say that I think the extreme case of that was a piece I saw in the Wall Street Journal that just illustrates something about the human condition, and I couldn't even tell you what. But about people who were oh so mad because, you see, they'd bought furniture really, really cheap online. They never stopped to think, why is this furniture so cheap? Why is the shipping so cheap? And so they thought they were going to get a dining table or something, or a set of chinaware or something for $5 or $10. And then what actually arrived at their house was a little package containing a dollhouse china set, or a dollhouse dining table. Well, what did you expect? How did you expect to get a whole dining table for, you know, $12 with free shipping? So that's one kind of a problem of expectations. Another kind of problem of expectations, of course, is people who expect that nuclear energy plants will malfunction in such a way as to leave a unusable wasteland for generations. And it's just not going to happen. You know, all of the areas outside of the plant boundary fence at Fukushima Daiichi were cleared for reoccupation within about 10 years, despite the Japanese government requiring them to be decontaminated to a level below the natural background in much of Japan. A lot of the Chernobyl exclusion zone even had been cleared for reoccupation, at least before Nogudnik started planting landmines there, and it had become a political controversy because If people were allowed to reoccupy the zone, then it would lose its character as a really great wildlife preserve. You know, and I look at nuclear energy and I don't see something that's going to leave a vast scars on the landscape for centuries, because I know that the area remaining at Chernobyl that hasn't been cleared for reoccupation pales in comparison to the coal pits of the Ruhr. You know, just think about that. Think about it for a little while, right? People expect nuclear waste to be horribly dangerous. People expect nuclear energy to be environmentally damaging. As I keep saying, one of the most wonderful things about nuclear energy is that we can detect, so the products of fission are beta gamma active, and the short-lived ones have quite high energy gammas, which has the characteristic that leaks of, say, nuclear waste materials can be detected very easily with quite cheap handheld detectors. Handheld detectors that cost less than $100 a piece. This is not something that you can say about most other hazardous substances, you know, industrial waste substances, whether that be heavy metals or petrochemicals or what have you. The fact is that you can detect fission products at a level a thousandth of the concentration where they become dangerous with a handheld Geiger counter. It's really that easy. Of course, to actually identify the fission products, trace them back to the source, and so on, takes heavier and more complicated equipment. But that is a second step, which, again, your first line is just the simple survey meter, which is an inexpensive piece of equipment, costs less than $100. They're very easy to get hold of. And then when you pick up something unusual, then you get the guys with the gamma ray spectrometers, and they can say, uh-oh, you've got, and trace it back to the source. But people expect nuclear energy to be dangerous. People expect the horrible cloud drifting across Europe, poisoning all in its path. Yeah, I mean, again, I have to remind you that the Swedish government finally admitted, more than a decade ago, that their decision to condemn the reindeer meat of the 1986 season as unfit for human consumption was unjustified by the actual amount of contamination and only resulted in harm to the Lapland reindeer herders. Whereas, of course, the German Environment Ministry continues to claim that it's dangerous to eat wild boars from the Black Forest. Again, if your entire diet consisted of wild boar meat caught in the Black Forest, then you might be in danger not of radiation poisoning, but of exceeding the allowable limit for intake of these radioactive substances, which is set a factor of 1,000 or so below any level at which any actual effect has ever been observed or inferred. But yeah, so I look at, again, expectation versus reality. And people have the expectation of, once we get solar and wind power, then electricity will be cheap and democratic. And I say, solar and wind both require a lot of land. Are you really 100% sure that a social situation in which you have to get necessary things for life from the biggest local landowner is called democracy? Because I always thought that was feudalism. But I don't know, I just keep coming back to this idea of expectation versus reality. So in Germany, they, several years ago, right, had this big scandal because the government had been pushing people to buy diesel cars, saying that diesel cars use less fuel, which is true, and polluted the air less. And it turned out that second part wasn't true. And so there's been this whole big controversy because, of course, you can't expect people who bought a car to just go and replace it. They're expensive. And people feel betrayed because the government was telling them you should buy this kind of car. And then the government comes and says, you shouldn't have bought that kind of car. What kind of idiots were you to listen to our advice? That's the sort of thing that really loses confidence in your government, in your officialdom, and results in support for extremist parties. I gotta tell you, it's true. But there have been progressively restrictions placed on these diesel cars, and the Munich City Council had been considering a measure that would have prohibited diesel vehicles on the Mittler Ring, which is, again, the ring road that runs three blocks from where I am here. It runs all around the sort of middle of town. There's the Altstadt Ring, which runs right around the old city walls, and then there's the Mittler Ring, which runs a bit further out. And neither of these is totally a grade-separated, divided highway, although there are such stretches that are grade-separated, and they're mostly divided. But it's surface streets that are set up as relief roads to draw traffic off of the neighborhood streets. Well, the city council, in its infinite wisdom, decided not to prohibit diesel vehicles on the ring road. Instead, they decided to impose a 30-kilometer speed limit. 30 kilometers an hour, ladies and gentlemen. Now, this is supposed to improve air quality in some fashion, and I have a hard time seeing it. 50 kilometers an hour, there is an argument for. That's about 35 miles an hour. 50 kilometers an hour, it's conceivable, right? But 30 kilometers an hour, the only way that could have a good effect is that if it reduced the number of stops and slowdowns and stalls, right? And I don't know that it's going to do that, in particular because there are still plenty of traffic signals on the Mittler Ring. And here's the big problem from my point of view. I don't think it's going to improve air quality because that slow of a speed, you're already behind the curve on engine efficiency, and also the engine has to run longer, right? So it's burning less fuel per unit time, but you're spending more units of time. It's a bit of a problem, right? Okay. So yeah, 30 kilometers an hour is very low for an air quality control speed limit. But here's the bigger problem. Remember what I said the purpose of the ring roads was? It's they're relief roads that are meant to take traffic off of the neighborhood streets. Now, if you make it so the speed limit on the ring road is actually lower than the speed limit on the neighborhood streets, are people going to take the ring road or are they going to take neighborhood streets and run over people's kids? See, this is a thing because I mention this only because I was walking around today, right, in the nice weather, and I was walking along a street that borders the big park, West Park, and that's a 30 kilometer an hour street. And that's a street which has big signs up that says, this street isn't cleared. In other words, it's not snow plowed in the winter. Park at your own risk. So if the ring roads are now subject to the same speed limitations as this secondary streets that aren't even snow plowed during the winter, what's going to be the effect on car traffic? Again, if they want to reduce air pollution from car traffic, what they should do is run a streetcar line down the middle of these ring roads. We need ring streetcar lines to connect the outer lying areas of, for example, the subway lines. It seems obvious. Anyway, send your cards and letters to Post Office Box 1035, Fort Worth, Texas 76101, United States of America. Send money to paypal.me/PrometheusLives or patreon.com.